Hi, this is Tamara Mahoney, and this is the Open Energy Access Podcast from the NAccess Foundation. This is the show where we focus on what's happening in the energy access sector in terms of development, innovation, success, and failure. This podcast was created for an audience of people who are already working or studying energy access. But I also think that anyone who is interested in innovation stories, startups, or development studies will find our topics pretty interesting. In this particular episode, we're going to be talking about a really cool open source hardware solution with Damien Velling, the CTO of Okra Solar. So this episode is definitely going to be more interesting for the engineers and the developers out there. Before we jump into the conversation, let me give you some quick background notes. I work for the NAccess Foundation, and I had the idea to produce this podcast about energy access stories because talking about our common challenges, successes, and failures in an open and transparent way is something that we think should be more public. All of us in the sector are working to bring modern, safe, and affordable energy solutions to some of the most remote parts of the world. And it is going to take a very wide range of skills in order for us to achieve the ultimate goal, which is to provide reliable and affordable access to energy for the 1 billion people around the world that still cannot access this basic service. This podcast, Open Energy Access, is a place where we can talk honestly about the steps we're taking to make global energy access a reality and hopefully share tips, lessons learned, and go behind the scenes in some of our open source projects that we think will have a benefit to the entire sector. You can read more about our open source philosophy and why we choose to work the way that we do by visiting our website, naccess.org, or by reading our blog posts on Medium. So like I mentioned in the intro, today we're going to be talking with Damien, the CTO of Okra. Okra is a company based out of Cambodia, and their plug-and-play smart grids combine the flexibility of a standalone pay-as-you-go solar system with the power availability of a fully-fledged mini-grid. This allows utility providers to easily deploy last-mile electrification with mobile payments, live alerting, and autonomous power distribution. Now, one of the big reasons why millions of households all over the world still don't have energy access infrastructure is because it's physically hard to reach a lot of these places. I don't mean hard in that the dirt road is really bumpy or that there's a lot of traffic. The villages that Okra is servicing can be very challenging to reach. You might need to take several flights, a motorbike ride, a boat ride, another motorbike, another boat, another motorbike, hope you don't get stuck in the mud during rainy season, and also hope that you arrive at the village during daylight hours. This is not only very time-consuming and hard, it's also really expensive to make this kind of journey. And those are among the reasons that Okra relies on remotely monitoring the communities that they service. Now, to be able to work like this means, generally speaking, there needs to be some sort of data or Wi-Fi connectivity in the village. But connectivity is also a real challenge in some of the most remote areas of the world, and in particular, in Cambodia. So how to solve this very common and very real issue of connectivity in these hard-to-reach areas? That is what we're going to be talking about now. Okra's solution is called Cicada, an open-source IoT communications module for energy access. This is a particularly cool conversation to have because we talk about how Damien solved a really big problem that I know a lot of other energy access companies will be able to relate to. If you've been struggling with a solution for connectivity in your own IoT space, you're going to want to listen closely. Cicada can be the solution that reduces your time to market, which will allow you to get back to work on the real problem that you're solving, which is energy access. So just a quick programming note, when we had this conversation, I was sitting at my office here in Mexico, and Damien was sitting in his office in Sydney, Australia. We had the conversation over Skype. The connection was pretty good, but just bear with me if you hear any audio issues. When we start our conversation, I start off by asking Damien to introduce himself, to tell me how he got started working with Okra, and what kind of background he comes from.
Thanks for having me, Tamara. I started out as a software engineer, but I've got an academic background in information systems and accounting. And basically, I was living in Sydney, Australia, and working on a number of different technology solutions for a range of different industries, from like digital marketing technology to smart buildings with like connected devices. But I was sort of looking to contribute to something more something with meaningful impact. And that's where Okra started, basically. So one of the my colleagues at a company I was working for in Sydney, he had similar values and similar goals to that I did. He was really interested in renewable technology and things like that. And he knew a lot about the problem that 1 billion people in the world don't have access to energy. So he sort of highlighted that to me. And I had a strong technical background. So we started talking, and then things, one thing led to another. And before we knew it, we had moved to Cambodia with the goal of solving energy poverty. So yeah, that's my background. And also that's sort of how Okra started.
So take me back a little bit more into this story. So you say one thing led to another and we ended up living in Cambodia. what was it that you guys were hoping to achieve in Cambodia, and why did you decide on Cambodia?
Yeah, that's a great question. So pretty much I was actually working, I had a sweet deal where I was working remotely as a software engineer. So I was doing a lot of traveling at the time, but I had kept in contact with Afi, my co-founder, because he was just like very entrepreneurial and we just sort of clicked. So we're always tossing around ideas, and he had been doing a lot of research on energy poverty around the world. And one thing we did was we just emailed a bunch of solar distributors in a range of developing countries around the world, asking them if we could just come there and follow them around and get an understanding for the problem space, and also get an understanding for why technology like solar hadn't really taken off in all of these countries where it was the perfect climate for things like solar energy. So that was the goal. And we got a really good response from a couple of countries, but the main one was Cambodia.
All right. Well, can you tell me a little bit more about how you and Afi founded Okra? Like, what kind of ideas did you have in mind for what you wanted to achieve in Cambodia? And how has that changed over time, if it has?
When we moved to Cambodia, we didn't really understand the problem space enough yet to know what a solution would be. I think the original idea was that we were going to provide this device that allowed households to share their energy. So we were working close with those solar distributors I talked about earlier, and those solar distributors were selling solar home systems. So we're like, all right, there's so much wasted energy in a solar home system because once the battery gets full, the power from the sun is then going nowhere. So we're like, all right, let's connect all the houses together and create this grid. And then each individual household can now sell their excess solar energy to the house next to them. So that was the initial idea. So we wanted to leverage this wasted energy that was occurring in these solar home systems. Once you connect them all together, you get this network effect, and then you get the most efficient use of the solar energy. But what we realize is that people out there, they don't want to sell solar energy. They just want electricity, right? You can't explain this complicated model of like, hey, we're going to install this system after you buy it off us and you're going to be able to sell energy. They're like, I don't want to sell energy. I want to buy energy and use it. But we started to realize as we went out to these communities that there was just no cost-effective way to get energy to the last mile. These communities are extremely hard to reach. So there's sort of two entities that we highlighted. There's the energy utility, and then there's the end consumer, so the people in these remote villages, in these households. The energy utility, they want to bring electricity to everyone in a country. And the end consumer, they want energy. And we saw that when we were out there. They were using old car batteries to charge mobile phones and run like a single light. But they would have to carry this car battery like on the back of a bicycle, or they'd sort of send their kids out with the car battery on the back of a bicycle. And like ride it for like 4 to 8 kilometers a day to like charge it up. So it was very clear that they wanted electricity, and these energy utilities, they wanted to get electricity out to everyone. But the problem, there was just nothing to connect these two entities. So no cost effective solution. And that's essentially what we highlighted. And that's sort of where Okra comes in. So we realized that we're going to have to do more than a software solution here. We're going to have to build a hardware product as well.
Okay, so the original idea for Okra has had its chance to evolve to where you're at now. But do you consider Okra today to be purely a technology company, or are you also involved with customer services?
We want to stay as a tech company. We don't want to become a distribution or an operations company. And if we want to really scale this out and have the largest impact as possible, then we can't put resources to learn the culture, learn the language, logistics and things like that. Like, that just isn't scalable. Whereas these energy utilities, that's their job. They are essentially a distribution company, like an infrastructure distribution company. So we saw that as the opportunity that we want to push our technology to the energy utility and then use their reach to get out to these communities. So essentially, our direct customer is the energy utility, okay, but the end user is the consumer in the household.
How big is the Okra team now today?
We're at 20, I think it's 20 people right now. So the team's getting quite large, and it's, our head office is still in Cambodia, but we're a very remote team. We embrace a remote culture, which sort of gives us access to talent around the world.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting. Thank you for giving me all that background. I think that's going to lead us into the main topic of this conversation, which is the project that Okra completed with NAccess. So you had proposed an idea to us that you called Cicada. So what is Cicada and why was it so important for Okra?
Well, we sort of have to stem back to the problems that Okra was facing at the time. And most of the problems we were having was around connectivity. So our device is an IoT device. IoT stands for Internet of Things. And just to quickly describe what that means for listeners who haven't heard of it before, basically everyone's got a connected device in their pocket. Your mobile phone and computers are all connected. So basically, previously we had an internet of computers, essentially. But as technology started to get smaller and cheaper and connectivity just got so much better, we started to see devices like smart cars, smart cameras, you know, smart sensors. So like agriculture had these sensors to detect like water moisture, or like office buildings have sensors to detect the room temperature. And all of these devices connected together, you essentially get an internet of things. So all of these connected devices communicating. Our core hardware product is an IoT device. Every single device that we put on a household must be connected to our cloud in some way, because that's really what enables our innovation. It enables us to track their energy usage. And then once they run out of energy credit, then we can disable their house until they top up again. And it also opens up a lot of other benefits around maintenance and detecting when like a solar panel might be shaded. So then we can really streamline maintenance, which reduces the cost. But I don't want to go on that tangent. So the key to IoT devices is connectivity. An Internet of Thing without connectivity is just a thing. So what we were seeing was that in our initial prototypes, we deployed them out in remote communities around Cambodia, but we were having houses just drop offline, and then we'd pretty much just be in the dark. We didn't know how they were performing, if they were still getting energy, or how our device was performing. So the communication component of our device was extremely unreliable, and this was causing a lot of headaches for us. Because like I said before, if without the connectivity, our device really just doesn't work. And we were using an off-the-shelf like 2G modem for our connectivity, and we were just having a lot of problems with it. So that's sort of what stemmed and started the conversation on this project. We wanted to basically build a simple and reliable connectivity solution for IoT devices. And we wanted to open source it because we realized that IoT startups are trying to solve real problems, but they also need connectivity. And when you're a startup, you really don't want to be spending time solving your connectivity problem when you really want to, you should be focusing on the real problem that you're trying to solve, like energy access, for example. So we saw that like this project could be leveraged and used by all of these other IoT startups out there, whether it's smart agriculture or whether it's energy access. So yeah, that's where the project kicked off.
You mentioned a little bit about like you were using this off-the-shelf 2G modem, correct? And yep. And you also talked about how you were having, you know, this idea kind of stemmed from the fact that you were having these massive connectivity problems, which I'm sure a lot of people listening to can relate to, especially if they've been working in the energy access field for a while or on a cloud-based system. But the thing that I found really interesting in your blog post that you talked about is how you were having these connectivity issues and you really, really trouble-sourced it down to this piece of hardware. And your solution to that was to make your own hardware. Like you didn't look to just buy a new piece or like, oh, you know, the connectivity is so bad here. This is just part of what working in Cambodia is like. So how did kind of developing this new device, how did developing Cicada improve things at Okra?
Yep. So we had some very strict requirements. One of them was cost. So the cost of our device has to be quite cheap for this to be a scalable model and a profitable model. Otherwise, it just doesn't work. So we could have just gone to a different off-the-shelf device, but they start to get really expensive. So that's probably the reason why the one we were using was not very reliable, is because it was like a mass-produced circuit board that you get off Alibaba that's produced somewhere in China. Like you can't really buy this kind of modem off the shelf. So there really wasn't many alternatives out there that were within our price range. And then some other requirements that we have are we don't just want to support 2G. We also want the ability to support 3G and 4G, because the 2G cell band is starting to become decommissioned in certain countries. But also even Wi-Fi. Like one of our pilot villages actually uses Wi-Fi. We partnered with a company that provides Wi-Fi via satellite. So this one village had no connectivity at all, which means our system doesn't work. So this was a great partnership because our system powered the dish that provided the Wi-Fi network for the village, and that Wi-Fi provided connectivity for our device. So we needed to support multiple connectivity types. So these requirements definitely influence our decision to just build a custom solution. There's just so many little things that can influence bad connectivity. There's the poor cell reception out in these villages that affects it. There's just the complexity in like the code that we had. So maybe our code wasn't all that robust. This modem had to be connected via like these really thin cables to our device, and they were a bit flaky. So we were like skeptical on those ones. And then there was like the condition, so humidity and high heat. We had some theories that was affecting the circuits. So there was just a lot of things that could have been influencing this poor connectivity. And it took, I think like 5 or 6 months of our prototypes being deployed. Most of our time was spent on connectivity problems as opposed to making our grid more efficient and providing a better user experience for the user. We were more focused on just the connectivity problems. So it just got to a point when we're like, all right, we know the requirements. We know that this is just not working for us and it's a huge blocker and we're sick of spending time on this. Let's get funding and build a solution to solve it from the ground up.
Okay, so you clearly knew what the problem was and you figured out the requirements that you needed to solve it, which was to build your own hardware solution from scratch. So you got to work on Cicada, and how did it go? Can you get into some of the technical details here about how Cicada works and what sort of advantages it had at Okra and also for the entire energy access sector?
Well, I might just run through like the four benefits that I sort of like the technical benefits of the project, and then I'll talk about like where we sort of see it going in the future. So there's four like main things. One, that it's platform agnostic, which essentially means that the firmware can work on any microcontroller or computer that your IoT device uses. So because most companies aren't using like a Linux machine for their device, it's like these very resource constrained microcontrollers, and there's so many different types of them. So we made sure that the code can actually run on any microcontroller. So that's one benefit. The second one is that, it supports 2G, 3G, 4G modems. One of the challenges there was that modems these modems don't really have like a standardized way for communication to work. So we had to create like this abstraction layer that allows these modems to be interchangeable. And that's one benefit we see there, is like that allows us to anyone else to add like Wi-Fi modems in the future. Or another type is a sub 1 gigahertz RF receiver, which allows for really long distance communication without internet at all. So that's like a completely different type of connectivity, but it's very important in the IoT space. So that's one area we'd really like to extend the library.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but could you just expand on that a little bit more? You're talking about the connectivity of a village that has no connectivity.
Yeah. So this is something that we see us our tech moving towards very soon, and we would like to extend the library to support this. So essentially what that means is, so yeah, maybe some of the listeners might be familiar with tech such as LoRaWAN, but basically it's a communication protocol that works on sub-1 gigahertz frequencies, but it's more suitable for creating your own communication network without the use of any internet infrastructure. So you don't need a big telecommunication company or anything like that. You can basically create your own network. And that means all of the data and bandwidth on the network is essentially free because there's no need for SIM cards or anything like that. But it also means that you can't access the internet with it. So you can sort of pair it with like 2G, 3G, or 4G. What we see is that we want to sort of connect all of our houses together with that sub-1 gigahertz technology so that all of our houses can communicate, and then just drop in a couple of the Cicada 2G, 3G, 4G modems in different areas of the village, which actually acts as like a gateway to the internet. What that does is it just reduces the amount of like internet gateways we need in a village, because that's the internet modems are much more expensive than these sub-1 gigahertz RF receivers that I'm talking about. So it's much more cost effective for all of our houses to sort of send data around its own little network, and then just have a couple of these internet gateways actually sending that data to the internet. Yeah, so that's
really
that's,
interesting. Thanks for elaborating about that.
Yeah, and that is a really like popular use. Like IoT is a very popular use case for that tech. So that's one of the avenues we want the Cicada project to go down. And just to go down the other two benefits that I was talking about before. So the other part is that it's modular. So the hardware chip or the hardware schematics that are part of the open source project, the design is actually just a modular chip that has a standardized plug so that it can just plug onto your IoT circuit board. That the benefits there are that if you wanted your IoT product to support 2G in one village or one area that you're using it, you just plug in the 2G version. But then in another area, you might want your IoT device to support Wi-Fi, so you can plug in the Wi-Fi version. So it means that the whole circuit board doesn't need to change for these different implementations. All you need to do is change out that communications chip. So that modularity is another huge benefit. And the last one is that it supports a communication protocol called MQTT, which is a very common messaging protocol in the IoT space just because it's perfect for unreliable networks. It uses very minimal data. That protocol supports bidirectional communication to the cloud or to the internet. And so rather than a device just sending data to the internet, you can also send commands back to it. And that's perfect for our implementation where we're tracking all of the data of how our system is running and the energy people are using. But then we can send commands back to each house to say to disable it if they've run out of credit, or enable them if they've topped up for credit, and some other benefits. So, supporting like that standard protocol in the IoT space was very important as well. That's the project in a nutshell, I guess.
What kind of expertise would other people need to have to start using Cicada? And about how long do you think it would take before someone saw a difference?
Yeah, so the audience is definitely engineers. If you're not an engineer, this project probably won't help you because if you wanted to like sort of design some sort of IoT solution and you're not an engineer, then you probably can buy a very, very expensive off-the-shelf solution. Usually we're targeting an audience where they want to build a custom device to solve a problem. IoT is one of the reasons why we're able to start solving the problem of energy access, because tech has got to a point where it's cheap enough and it's smart enough to have these innovative business models. So we're definitely targeting companies or organizations that are looking to create custom devices. We want them to focus on the real problem that they're solving. So if they just get one technical co-founder or like an engineer to basically come up with their connectivity solution, we're hoping that they look towards a project like Cicada. Because if they're a competent engineer, then you can actually get the prototype working up and running within a day. And you can also use some of the dev boards for the modems that we support. So you don't even need to get like the hardware manufactured. But we have also open sourced our hardware so that when you want to go to scale, you can get that hardware manufactured, which brings the cost down. But just for getting up and running and prototyping, you can just buy a development modem and then use our firmware library. So yeah, that's the audience, and we sort of see it as something that's quite a low barrier to entry to use.
Do you or does Okra have a philosophy about open sourcing this kind of thing? This doesn't sound like you had a problem with our open source philosophy. Is there anything that you wouldn't want to open source in order to achieve energy access faster? Or do you think it's kind of anything goes? Because you also have to think about your investors or whoever has funded your company, if they might have an opinion on that as well, unless all of the money for your operations is coming from sales.
Yeah, it's a tricky space, open source. Like, you obviously want to, like, we want to give back to the community, because a lot of like our cloud tech that we use is using open source technology. So we actually rely heavily on open source technology. So it was awesome that we could give back with a project like this. And there is a lot of aspects of our code and certain other designs that we've highlighted are perfect for open sourcing, but there's also certain things that, we don't really want to open source because they're like our competitive advantage. So it's sort of like a fine line of where you want to be able to, we want to be able to still succeed and be profitable so that we can achieve our goals. But we want to open source anything that is sort of boilerplate and that can just help other companies speed up. But one of the benefits of open source is that it sort of like decentralizes the maintenance of projects. So by Cicada, for example, the code base is still like early days. So getting as many other companies using it means people are going to find bugs and hopefully put in fixes for them. So it's not just us who are contributing to improving the project, but every other company that uses it are also going to be improving it. So these are sort of the benefits that you get. Yeah, one example is like we've only added support for 2G, 3G, 4G modems at the moment, but we want to add that Wi-Fi support as well. And so we're hoping that whether we get to it or maybe another company who's using Cicada, they could easily add Wi-Fi support to the project. So that's like the benefits of everyone contributing. But there obviously are negatives. Like you got to keep the investors happy. You got to keep your IP there to keep your competitive advantage. There are some sad stories in open source. Back in like the 90s, there was like a lot of like talented hackers who would come up with this epic security software and open source it straight away because that's the movement they believed in. But then you'd get these entrepreneurs come in and just take that and then monetize it basically. And then the hacker or the developer who originally did it, they sort of don't get any of the perks. So yeah, that's pretty sad. So, and it's like I said, we've just sort of got to come up with an open source roadmap of things that we want to give back to the community that we see that getting that like collaborative benefits from, as like that should outweigh like the cost of us like maybe losing a bit of IP. So yeah, we've sort of like highlighted numerous like libraries and designs that we can open source. And yeah, I'm sure the investors will be happy with like the decisions that we make at the end of the day, but no conflicts thus far.
So the way it looks, and according to what you're saying, it sounds like the project was a success. Did anything happen along the way that made you kind of question if you could make this happen? And do you personally consider this a success as an engineer and also for Okra and for the energy access world?
Yeah, so I think as a whole, definitely the project was a success. Ran very smoothly on both sides, I think, and there were no serious hurdles or road bumps, which is pretty surprising for any project, really. But I think it's because, like I was saying before, we just had that huge period of where we were dealing with these connectivity problems and really coming up with the requirements well ahead of time. So the project was already quite well thought out and planned, which did help. I think one of the biggest hurdles we had was this was the first open source project that Okra was going to release. And yeah, you just have to, when you're open sourcing something, you just got to make sure that the code quality is there, which wasn't a problem for us as we already try to have quite a high standard of code internally. But because it's going to be public and it's sort of representing the image of the company, you just got to make sure that we're doing code reviews and every part of the code or the schematics has like documentation so that other people can use it. So just getting to a level of decent documentation was certainly a challenge. And it was kind of a cool outcome because it's sort of influenced some internal processes around documentation. We sort of see it as like, if you're going to open source something, then follow these processes. But then like, why don't we just follow them internally? And then when some of these libraries that we're building internally start to mature, that we can just straight away open source them because they're already like at the quality and the level that they should be when you're open sourcing something. So I think that was like a really good learning experience for us, and had positive outcomes for the company as a whole.
That's a really good point I didn't think that you made. And I was just wondering, since you've published everything on GitHub, have you found anything? Have you found any little tiny mistakes?
Yeah. There's definitely been like bugs that we've picked up as we've like, one great thing about this project is that we're using it internally. So we're always like, we found a couple of bugs, but we're always making improvements. Like we just added support for like a UDP packet, which is like another type of IP protocol that we didn't add support for initially. And then we wanted to use that protocol so that we could retrieve the time because we wanted to set the time on our device. So yeah, we just included that in and pushed it out and added that feature then and there. Like one like methodology when you are maintaining a code base is that like whenever you touch a file or like a class, you always leave it better than you found it. So as we use it day to day in our own code base, we're always going to be contributing and improving it. And yeah, we're hoping other people do as well.
Is there anything else that you want to say about this project?
I'm hoping that other companies like in our space and also just in the IoT space can like leverage this project. But also just like feel free to reach out to us if you've got any concerns or like questions on how to use it. Because like I said before, the documentation is a massive part of open sourcing something. So if any of the documentation isn't clear, then like just hit us up and we'll work together to improve it based on like anyone else's experience using the library. Any other engineers or companies that use it, just get in touch and give us feedback. And then hopefully we can work together just to improve it so that, yeah, anyone else that uses it in the future is going to have like a seamless experience.
Here's my last question. You mentioned in the beginning part of our conversation, you know, this problem that we still have 1 billion people in the world that don't have access to electricity. In your opinion, do you think that the technology exists today to provide access to electricity to the entire globe? Or do you think we're still missing something?
I think the technology side, 100% the tech exists today. If you just think about like phones, for example, like the amount of computing power and the information that you have access to on a phone, like that is so brilliant. If we can do that, then we definitely have the technology to energize the rest of the globe. But maybe the thing that's missing is entrepreneurs and people taking a risk to put their minds together and put in the time to actually solve it. I think that is something that Okra brings to the table. Like we've just got a group of like-minded engineers and an absolutely great team. And that is what I think that was the missing piece of the puzzle. Yeah, I think the tech is definitely there. I just think I'm hoping more and more people start to get into this space and get out of like the traditional mindset that you need to just get a 9-to-5 job in your local city, because yeah, there's many more problems than just energy access around the world that need brilliant minds to solve them.
Oh, cool. I like like the idea of ending the conversation on an inspirational note. So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me today. I really appreciate you sitting down with us.
Perfect. Yeah. Thanks for having me, Tamara. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to launching the Cicada project.
NAccess is really pleased to have the Cicada project published on our website, and we're really proud for having supported it. So if you're ready to dig into the code and the documentation, or if you want to read the story behind the project, head over to naccess.org/projects. You'll find everything you need there. And if you have any questions or comments or tweaks for the code, then Okra really does want to hear from you. You can visit okrasolar.com to send a message directly to the developers there, or you can use our contact page to reach out. Remember that we made this project open source for a reason. We really do want you to use it, and the Okra team wants to see Cicada continue to improve. So don't be shy about reaching out with questions or comments about Cicada. And to echo what Damian said just a minute ago, it's true. We need more entrepreneurs out there willing to take risks and to try new things in order to achieve global energy access. So if you have an idea for a project that you think can be beneficial to the broader energy access sector, then head over to naccess.org and submit your application today. That's NACCESS.org. That's where you can submit your application. Thanks again for listening. We'll be back in your podcast feeds again soon.